Okay, now we've got all those people in the higher realm. Are you up there? Can you stamp your feet? Yes. Good on you. Thank you. Now, for those of you upstairs, if you'd like to send any questions or comments down, because, you know, they're higher beings up there. So, of course, they have to take priority over us lesser beings in this realm. So if you'd like to send your questions down on a piece of paper, we'll try and answer them. But in the meantime, some questions, yes, questions from our old favourite. I love sensitive questions. Go on.
A recent incident where you ordain some man.
Yep.
Oh, no,
as a consequence of which, as a consequence of which, you were ostracized by your Ajanta lineage. Was that ostracization an indication of wrong view, wrong understanding, what the ordination involved?
Okay, you're asking about the Bhikkhuni ordination in Perth. There was the ostracization, ostracism, whatever it's called, something to do with ostracism. But anyway, but like everything else, remember the Buddha's teachings, this too will pass. It's only a temporary sort of like spat in the family. But as I said, two bad bricks in the wall is no reason to destroy a wall. So these have been my friends and I've been their friends for such a long time. And that friendship, I think, will hold. And after things settle down and people, the lost face disappears, then there has to be peace and harmony. Because what was wrong with giving women an opportunity to fulfill their aspirations, to live the spiritual life to the very highest by having a bhikkhuni ordination? It is actually legally possible. So now we just need the will. So yeah, you do that, you stir things up a bit. But I don't want to sort of hurt anybody, I just want to help people.
Why don't you stick that one bold step further to share the thought
Now, remember, many people are prisoners of their conditioning. And I remember living in the northeast and seeing this water buffalo. And you can't make a water buffalo go fast. So sometimes you have to go slow, slow. Monks, Buddhists, we're very patient. As long as we're going forward, and we're going forward. So just be patient, but you must always be careful not to shout at the water buffalo. If you get water buffalo angry, they won't go anywhere. So I remember this. This is a modern story that over in Australia, that sometimes that even schools, they have to raise money for this and that. So they have these little, call it fates or fairs. Just people sell things or they do things to raise money. And so somebody, they had a camel and they were giving camel rides. And you know, they thought maybe $1, $2 to go around the park on a camel for the kids and maybe even big kids as well. Because it's strange to ride a camel. And it was the end of a hot summer's day. And the camel was finished for the day. And this man came and said, "Look, I always wanted to ride a camel. Can I ride a camel?" He said, "We're finished for the day." "Oh, come on, please, I'll pay double." "Okay, it's for the school." He said, "Okay, you can ride." So he told the camel, "Come and get down." The camel wouldn't move. He'd had enough. Come on, get down. I paid a couple of dollars. Cow wouldn't move. And so the owner of the camel went up to it and just started stroking it. There. Look, you've done so much wonderful work today. We've raised so much money for these children and their school. And I'm so proud of you. And this man has come from a long way. And he just wants to ride you once. Can you do this for the kids of the school? And the camel went straight down and let him ride it. And the person who told me this was amazed that even a camel can understand kindness. And they can understand when people try and get upset at them. If you want a camel to do something, be kind to it. Same with your wife, with your husband. Darling, I really do. Don't shout at them, it's a waste of time. So, I hope that answers your question. Yeah? Questions, yeah? These are from the upstairs? These are the high realm. Okay, do the high realm questions first of all. So if you really want to get priority next time, please go and sit upstairs. Here we go. Pertaining to the fourfold assembly of bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, laymen, laywomen, is it only referring to lay people who are keeping 10 precepts, 8 precepts, 5 precepts of lay supporters? Actually, lay supporters, I think I was told this in Penang. No, the fourfold assembly. Now this is, again, if you start reading what the Buddha said, that he said that he would, because just after he became enlightened, under the Bodhi tree, according to this tradition, that Mara said, okay, you're enlightened, but just keep it to yourself, don't teach. Because Mara never wanted anyone else to become enlightened. And the Buddha said, no, I will teach. He said, and I will not leave this world until I've established a fourfold assembly. The bhikkhus, that's the male monks, the bhikkhunis, you know what I ordained a few days. Oh, I didn't actually ordain them, I just participated in the ceremony. The white robed laymen, these are basically those who are Buddhist laymen and Buddhist laywomen. When I've established those four assemblies and they're strong, then I will enter Parinibbana, then I will leave. And that's why the Buddha had to wait all that time until the monk Sangha, the male Sangha, the female Sangha, the male lay disciples and the female lay disciples were very strong. Okay, now I can leave. I've done my job. So the Upasakas, Upasikas, the lay men and lay women, it's basically at least keeping 5 precepts, at least being a Buddhist. So that's what those four groups really mean. Hopefully that explains that. Non-Buddhist people claim that evil spirits will enter one's mind when one meditates. Your comments, please. No way. It is, people say meditation is dangerous. It's much more dangerous not to meditate. Evil spirits, like Johnny Walker, like Guinness, they enter people who don't meditate. And I've seen it myself. That's why they're called spirits, isn't it? They certainly are evil. So when you meditate, you usually don't drink that sort of stuff. So, no, that's wrong. Non-Buddhist people are only saying that sometimes just to scare people, because we all know that it's good for you to meditate. And the evidence is out there. Just go on Google and just see, just meditation, evil spirits. They say, no way. Meditation and good health, prosperity, all the sort of things you want. Yeah, that does work. The Theravada Nanlinish had been broken and cannot be re-established, so there cannot be Theravada nuns. I always thought that there was no legal way of doing it, but then I actually started to get to know some nuns from Taiwan, from Korea, and realize that I was saying those Korean monks, there's no difference. Legally, technically, the Mahayana, Vajrayana, Theravada, that's only on the Dhamma. Our Vinaya is exactly the same. There is no Mahayana, Theravada, Vajrayana, Vinaya. There's only one Vinaya. It's all the original stuff. So realizing we've all got the same Vinaya. And seeing sort of some of the nuns in Taiwan and Hong Kong, how they actually live and practice, they were keeping exactly the same rules as I read in the books. And that's when I realized the lineage has not been broken. That was a myth. And because there's no. Okay, you're saying that those nuns are Mahayana nuns. There is no such thing as a Mahayana nun, a Theravada nun, or a Vajrayana nun. There is a nun who follows Vajrayana, who follows Mahayana, who follows Theravada. They're nuns first. And that's all one needs. There's no such thing as a Theravada monk, a Vajrayana monk, or a Mahayana monk. All there is a monk who follows Vajrayana, a monk who follows Theravada, a monk who follows Mahayana. This is, we're disciples of the Buddha, and that makes the lineage pure. Are they breaking the precepts by entering the jewelry shop? If they're just blessing the shop. But if they're buying lots of jewelry, then that's not really good. Well, you say they are not good nuns.
What is it? I'm not making comments.
Yeah, well, I would say that.
When I see that, non-Buddhists would probably think, what are you nuns? Looking around the jewelry,
yeah.
The people in the shop.
Yeah, but apparently you've seen some monks have gone into, and somebody said they went into the Mont Blanc shop to get their sort of designer watches or whatever. So, I mean, some monks have done that. But the lineage has not been broken.
But don't you think that by doing that, you will
leave
a false impression
among? Oh, yeah. No, by going into a shop and sort of breaking your precepts, now that's another sort of question. That's a wrong thing to do. But as far as the lineage is concerned, that lineage is still there. And there's lots and lots of really wonderful bhikkhunis, nuns, who don't go into gold shops, who actually keep their precepts so well. Much better than the average monk. And I don't mind saying that. So, lineage is still there. Legally, all the experts, the people who know what it means by lineage, who have done all that research, the research is done. It's been proven. If you don't believe me, just go on the internet, the Hamburg Conference, Bhikkhu Bodhi's papers, brilliant research which was done, which has established beyond any sort of question, the lineage was unbroken. It's a wonderful thing that it's there, so it can be done. So it's not really a question of, you know, it was wrong in the sense of legally wrong. It's just politically, should it have been done or should it not be done? That's the problem.
Oh, go on then. Yes? Chris?
May I comment?
Yes.
You see, I think the debate over the issue that has happened has gone on long enough. And as lay person, I feel we should not be taking sides. Because when we take sides, we start with an opinion, we may create powerful thoughts in our mind. Because every time we have, oh wait, we are fighting this party, and we are fighting Adam Brown, okay? When we do that in our mind, we are bound to have default thoughts in our mind. So please, I think we should just let the issue rest. It has been going on for too long, and many people get caught up into it, and I think it's such situations, we should just let the situation rest and not.
Certainly will, time will tell. But the most important thing is that even if we have differences of opinion, even in the time of the Buddha people would have differences of opinion, we don't go getting upset and angry at each other. You know, we're Buddhists, we respect each other. So that respect is really, really important. So whoever it is, whoever it was, and always remember to love your enemies. So that love is what actually melts everybody, and in the end say, what's the difference? Because I've got no upset or hatred about anybody. So still be wonderful. I'm sure it will happen that whatever sort of separation there was will only be temporary. It's anicca, it's impermanent. Because people get too excited. So just shh, calm down. It's all good stuff. There are people who didn't, who are upset at the bhikkhuni ordination. They must have had their reasons, so I respect that. But you know, we had our reasons for ordaining bhikkhunis, respect that. You know, live and let live. Because if it's really unwholesome, if you went around killing people, or just, you know, going to prostitutes or something, then kick me out. But you know, you've done good things, so leave it alone. Anyway, is it wrong to pray to the Buddha asking for wealth, good health, etc.? It's not wrong, it's just sort of a waste of time. It is. Because instead of actually praying to the Buddha asking for wealth, you should go to work. Or learn meditation and become a meditation teacher. It's much better. Or asking for good health. Sometimes, though, that people can get some inspiration or hope. So there is always something there in all types of prayer, whether it's going to the church or going to the mosque or going to a Buddhist temple and doing some praying. Sometimes a bit of wishful thinking, a bit of hope can actually encourage a person. It's the same sort of force that if you're in, say, watching a football match, even you know, at home on the TV, you know, you're cheering for your team. Come on, you can score! And when they do score, you think that you did that. And they go, yeah, yeah! But if those footballers, they didn't have, especially the people, you know, in the grandstand cheering them on, they would never play so well. So it's actually, you know, just even doing a bit of chanting and praying, that's encouraging yourself, that's cheering yourself on. So it does have a little effect, but not much. So there is an effect there, so don't deny that. But the best thing is, if you want good health, there's much more effective ways of getting good health than doing pray, 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 pray. Okay, that's good. What is the difference between meditation and mind control? That's a very nice question. Mind control is when you get your mind like this and you can control it and hold it. Now actually that means you get stressed out. And sometimes, this is one of the problems with some type of meditation is far too much effort, far too much control. And that creates so much tension inside people that after a while they give up. So that was never the right type of meditation. The right type of meditation being very soft. Not controlling, but letting go. Letting things be and letting things settle. This is an old simile. I will need Victor's help on this. I'm now going to control this water. So it's absolutely still. Is it still yet?
No,
it's not. Okay, so I'll try harder.
Yeah,
I'll really try. I'm trying. Now this is how many people meditate, trying to hold their mind still.
Yeah.
You can never do it this way. However, there's a very easy way to get this water absolutely still. You put it down, leave it alone. Now, you may notice, Victor, that it actually moved more when I put it down. When you start letting go of meditation, originally it moves more. But now it's still moving, but... Is it still there?
It's almost
It's pretty absolutely still. I could never hold it that still. And that's actually how we meditate. If you try and hold, another thing which people do when they meditate, is it still yet? Still yet? Come on, just. But when you know how to meditate properly, you just leave it alone. That's not controlling. That's letting it be. And then it settles down. And that's an important thing to know. Because if you don't know that, you waste a lot of time meditating. And you just give up after a while. You think it doesn't work. Or you can't meditate. Everyone can meditate. Just sometimes they don't do it the right way. There are meditators who are full of pride and think they are better. Yes, that's me. So, but no, if you should always be humble as a meditator. And if you are humble, flaunt it. I am the most humble meditator in the world. Meditators who are full of pride are not really good and gifted meditators. So a really good meditator, not full of pride, because if you control, you get big ego. The more you control, the bigger the ego. If you control a lot, you become like a Mr. Bush. Control the whole world. Big ego. When you let go, you don't try and control anything. Then you become sort of like a monk, a peaceful person, a hermit. So real people who meditate, who really know how to let go, their pride just totally disappears. Ajahn, what are the qualities of a wise person? A wise person is someone who doesn't need to ask a question such as that. <There's questions. laughs> Can we ever have a bit of fun? You don't always have to teach exactly right. My goodness, this is a whole essay, so please take time. I wish to understand my situation as I cannot fathom if it's a mind problem or a spirit attack situation. When I said spirit, I cannot be sure whether this is a person's spirit or a demigod kind of spirit. For the past 2 months, at times, I did not sleep for 5 straight days, and the last few days I did not sleep, just rolling on the bed. I am still as normal, but had some involuntary bodily actions. So who should I consult? I checked the SM4, the Psychiatric Symptomatic Manual, but not for any mental issue. Thanks, and may suffering be purified. Now this is, I know enough psychiatrists, and one of the other things which we've done over in Australia, we started the Australian Association of Buddhist Counselors and Psychotherapists. That's Ngkong Tam. You know, he's a Malaysian. He's at the start, he founded the Young Buddhist Association of Malaysia, I think. Ngkong Tam. But you know, he also started the Australian Association of Buddhist Counselors and Psychotherapists, because so many people in that field are either Buddhists or they go to Buddhism to find out, you know, all of their insights and wisdom. And on one of the, I think the first two AGMs of that, I gave the keynote, and one of the members, she's probably already made a fortune now. She was a counselor, psychotherapist, and she started a company called sleeplikeababy.com. Because there's many people who suffer from insomnia, just like the person who wrote that, either a temporary insomnia or just chronic insomnia. And the method which she taught, just on the internet site, we had to pay some money. She said she had 100% success. It was a very simple form of meditation called body sweeping. Just taking parts of your body one by one and learning how to relax them. Now, I haven't got time to go through a body sweeping exercise here, but just give you the beginning of it. Without actually looking, can you feel your toe? Any toe will do. If you can't feel them, just wiggle them without looking at them until you get contact with that part of your body, with your toes. Now, will them to relax. Just be so kind to them that you feel the sensations in your toes slightly change to become more at ease, more relaxed, more comfortable. You can actually find that you can relax your toes. And in this method, you move from the toes to your feet, to the ankles, to the calves, to the knees, to the thighs, to the bottom, to the waist, to between the waist and the chest, to the chest, you know, up to the shoulders, down the arms, to the head. You actually relax parts of your body systematically. And you release all the physical tension from your body that way. And at the same time, all the worries, you've got a job to do, you're relaxing the body. And all the worries about trying to get to sleep or not getting to sleep all disappear. And usually before you reach your bottom, you're fast asleep. It's much better than counting sheep or doing these other stupid exercises. Because this is totally non-stress. And she said she was cleaning up with this method, making a fortune. So the lady who wrote that, it's not being possessed by a spirit, it's a natural part of our modern lifestyle. It could be a physical thing going through your body, it could be stress in your life. No matter what that cause is, that little method of doing a body sweeping meditation, so powerful. You just fall asleep very easily. That's the number one method. So you can actually learn it here, or if you've got too much money to waste, get on the internet, sleeplikeababy.com, and download the method and just you go to sleep very quickly. The other way, now if you don't want to do that, is get a CD of one of Ajahn Brahm's talks. After a while, you know. I hope not. What does letting our mind go really mean? What that really means is letting this controller disappear. All of this wanting and willing and trying to achieve things and get places and do stuff. Imagine you've been on this long journey and you've always been moving and going somewhere and doing things, and now I say just stop where you are. Sit down. Don't go anywhere. Stop all the moving, all the going. That means letting it be. So when you meditate, you're not trying to get somewhere or go someplace. You're just being more fully where you already were in the first place. Just resting and being where you are. And you'll find where you are changes. You become so peaceful and still. That's what letting go is. Letting go of this thing inside. I always wanted to change, make things happen, do things. Let that thing go. And then you're just so peaceful and so still. I think that's... Any more questions? I think I've gone through most of them. Yep. How's the time going there?
We still have 20 minutes.
20 minutes? Does that mean I don't get so much breakfast tomorrow morning if I stop early? See, they cut down your wages in this place. They exploit you to the max.
An hour.
Ah! Yes, boss. So, okay, any other questions anyone has? Yeah, especially from upstairs. Those high realms are probably already enlightened up there already because of your extra meritorious store of good karma up the top there. So any other questions about just what we can do to actually to make our practice, to make ourselves better human beings and to create more happiness in this world? And there's some positive things, there's some very practical things which hopefully I've taught this evening. And that way that I think this, because I've been a Buddha for such a long time, I know these things really work. You've got so much benefits for yourself. You just want to spread those out as much as possible. But teaching and talking and stuff like that, you can do all of that, but it's up to you to take some of those teachings on board and actually start practicing them and making them work. And when they do work, you think, wow, this is an amazing, this is something which you don't just believe in, but you put into practice and it actually works. You become happier, peaceful, more successful people. You actually become more wealthy as well, because you find you don't need so much. You're healthier because, you know, you don't get so stressed out. So, you know, it was really great, good fortune. So the greatest blessing I can give you on Chinese New Year is actually for you to be here. Wow, what a blessing that is. Yeah?
In the life of your experiment, you first related to ordination of the language. Are you still well received in Thailand?
Am I still well received in Thailand? Yes, in most places. Just at home monastery in Wat Pa Phong, there's still a couple of monks who are not receiving me yet. But all the other monks, yes. Look, where are we giving the talks? It's in the Thai temple. Yeah, well, Chedawa. Now, just before I came here, there was a group of a couple of Thai monks from Bangkok come to visit me in Perth in April. Because, look, right, you know Thai monks. They're pretty easy going. You know, it's not... What's the, those of you who've been to Thailand, what's the word you remember? Mai Pen Rai, yes. Mai Pen Rai. Means it doesn't matter. Let it go. And that's the attitude of most of the Thai monks. So this, most of the Thai monks, they're absolutely fine. No problem at all. So if it's still a sensitive matter here in KL, look, come on, you guys.
I hold entirely a different view.
Okay.
I support what you have done because you are many steps ahead of, with due respect,
yeah,
to other senior lineage. You okay. Still misguide them because they hold the wrong view. They do not have the proper understanding of
well, whatever.
Why a nun should not be ordained.
Okay, but my understanding is always to be kind to all people. So always be kind even to... Yeah. Well, I don't mind, I don't mind what they're doing. My job and your job is to be kind to them. What they do is their job. Your job is to be kind. And never say a bad word about others. That famous saying goes, if you can't improve upon the silence... shut up. So if you can improve upon the silence, fine. Okay, your hands are going to fall off, yes? Go on.
Oh, wear white.
Okay. Upasikas, upasikas. This was... what they were described as the white robed, or the white wearing men or white wearing women. Even if you go to sort of Sri Lanka, you know, on the Poya days, which is, you know, the Sabbath and moon days, people would wear white. It was the old tradition there. Because it was a symbol of purity. You know, I mentioned this before, I'm sure. You know the word candidate, where that comes from? A candidate for an election? Candid is the Latin word for white. Because in the time of the Roman Empire, in ancient Rome, anyone who was going to stand for the Senate, you know, the governing body in Rome, would wear white as a symbol of their ethical purity. And they would be elected, this is a great point, they would be elected not on what they promise they will do, but on their past actions. Because they would wear white, say they've been really good people. In the past, they've served, they've helped, they've made good decisions, they've been moral. So they'd always be elected on what they had done in the past. And these days, what do? We elect our politicians for what they promise they will do in the future. And that's all over the world. And I really feel a lot of sadness and sympathy for the politicians, because how can we promise what we're going to do in the future? We don't know what the future is going to be like. So, you know, none of the politicians knew the credit crunch was going to come or how long it was going to last. You know, they didn't know there was going to be an earthquake in Haiti or you know, the tsunamis. We don't know what's going to happen next. So when politicians promise for the future, most of those promises, with the best will in the world, will not be kept. I'm saying with the best will in the world. I never blame a politician for breaking a promise. I blame them for making that promise in the first place. So that's actually where the word candid comes from. And it's even in Western countries now. In Western countries, you go to, say, like a wedding. What happens at a wedding? The bride wears white. It's a symbol of her purity. And the groom wears black as a symbol of... No, I better not go into that. It's true though, isn't it? Yes, go on. That I haven't got a clue, because I'm not going to make any promises about the future. Please judge me on what I've done today. So I haven't got a clue what I'm doing tomorrow in the future. I haven't got a clue. What's it supposed to be? Yeah, you tell what the program is, but I don't promise to follow it.
Tomorrow's workshop's theme is a Happy New Year. So there will be two sessions. Session one, it's the topic is dealing with unhappiness and worries, healing wounds, becoming whole again. So very practical topic. And the second topic will be in the afternoon, living a good life, discovering love in difficult places.
Not that type of love. Okay, that's yes.
What is your view on chanting? And also we have now groups of people that pray to be Buddhist and going to places where they have all this earthquake and chanting to the spirits. They pass away. So what are your views on
that? Okay, what's the views on chanting, especially some people going to places where they're saying earthquakes in Haiti and chanting for the spirits? I think in Haiti, I don't really think it would be much use because the spirits aren't Buddhist. I was actually saying that seriously, because remember, when a person actually, once they do die, very often if it is in a sudden, unexpected situation, a car crash or tsunami, earthquake or whatever, sometimes they do hang around for a while. This is an interesting story. It's a very famous story of just after the tsunami in Phuket about one of the taxi drivers. This was 2 or 3 days after the tsunami. The taxi driver, you know, was just trying to get some sort of fares to pay his bills, and he actually saw 3 Westerners. So he stopped for them and they hailed his cab. They wanted to go down to the beach. Surprised that anyone wanted to go down there, but he let them in his taxi. And he sort of started driving to the beach. He turned around and they vanished. He picked up 3 ghosts. That really was very... It wasn't actually so much he was scared, but he didn't get paid. But that was actually a true story that happened. So sometimes these beings, they do hang around for a while. But... you know, if you're doing some chanting, if it was chanting, say, Mahayana Sutras or Vajrayana Sutras or Theravada, it should be culturally appropriate. So it's a waste of time doing that for a country like Haiti, which is mostly Catholic Christian. There's a few Protestant groups there as well. However, that sometimes it may have a slight help, you know, if you just have some loving kindness and some powerful mind, which you can sort of contact the dead spirits and just release them. But the most appropriate service would be one which is culturally appropriate and religiously appropriate. And that's usually only just the first few days after a big disaster like that. But it can help. Does that answer the question?
Yeah. Just want to say shortly after that, what about, say, after 2 or 3 years?
Well, after 2 or 3 years, just most of those people have got reborn by then or gone off, left. So there'd be very, very little left. And if they are left, people will be able to see them, just one or two, and just that's where you get sort of the Ghostbusters in. There's really only just one or two left at that time. But most people get reborn pretty quickly. Okay. Well, even in Theravada as well as Vajrayana and Mahayana, sometimes the number 49 days keeps coming up. I mean, it does keep coming up. I've seen that myself. So 7 weeks, I don't know why. But after that, most people have gone. 49 days. Fine, yes? When you do a funeral, should you chant something like Maranasati, or you should just have good thoughts? If you're chanting and you don't know what you're chanting, you don't know what that means, or the person who's died doesn't know what it means, it doesn't really help. But if you know what it means, because when you're chanting, you're thinking it as well, so you're giving the good thoughts. So that does help. So it's the thoughts, the intention is the most important thing. Yes.
You made a statement earlier that most people are born within 49 days or maximum 2 to 3 years. What then is the relevance of ancestor worship by the Chinese people in relation to Qingming, where you worship your great-grandparents, your parents, etc.
Okay, why are you worshipping your great-grandparents even though they've already been reborn? Why do we worship the Buddha? Even the Buddha's gone. He's not going to get reborn again. We do it and worship that because we have respect and gratitude, you know, for the Buddha. So a lot of times we have respect and gratitude for our parents, our grandparents, people without whose hard work and sacrifice we would not be here. So I'm an Ang Mo, I still remember this. So I have no gratitude to my father, to my grandparents, because they worked so hard and they really tried hard to educate me and look after me and teach me. So I have a lot to be thankful for, so I recall them.
I went through this experience some years back where I brought my son to see a spiritualist who was in touch with my father. And when my father died, I was only 13 years old. Obviously, I wasn't married. I didn't have that child. And yet, when my son was sitting next to me, through the medium, my father said, "My grandson is here today." How do you explain that?
Now, there was, as a group of quite wealthy people in Sydney, Australia, one of them is the author, philosopher Philip Adams. There is a professional magician whose name I can't recall. There's a multimillionaire called Dick Smith. And they started something called the Skeptic Society, because they wanted to use modern science to question, you know, some of the gullible beliefs of Australians. And one of the things they did, which was a fascinating experiment, they went to England and they looked for an actor. They paid him a lot of money, a whole 1 year's salary. And they wanted him to actually to go to see mediums and to learn how it works. Because once he'd learnt the ropes, they were going to invite him to Sydney to actually to be a medium, but to fake it. He was an actor, professional actor. And once he did his first 6 months of just going around and seeing how it works, then they invited him to Sydney. Being very wealthy people, they put advertisements in all the papers saying this wonderful medium from England with a great record is coming soon. And they hired a big hall. And he was a fake. But after 3-4 days, the newspapers were saying just how wonderful this medium was and how accurate he was. And it's so wonderful to have a real medium in Australia. And then they came clean. It was an actor who was faking it. What they did there was actually to prove how easy it is to deceive people. Now be careful. Because a person sees you sitting next to somebody. And they can tell very quickly, just an ordinary person, whether that's your wife or whether that's your mistress. I see you brought your mistress with you today. How does he know that? They can see pretty quickly that that's not your son. It's a grandson or something. So there are tricks. So be careful there. However, sometimes the medium actually, it's not a trick. Some of those mediums are real. But they're very rare. But be careful. So easy to be deceived.
Do you believe in mind readers?
Mind readers? You know, I thought you were going to say that. How did I know that? No. Sometimes there is, I've known some monks who can mind read. But usually, it's you know, when a monk or a nun or a great meditator, whenever that starts to arise, they just don't develop it. Because it's unethical, it's an invasion of privacy. It's like reading someone's personal mail or hacking into your email account. And that's unethical, because your private thoughts are yours. And it's really up to you, if you're like in a student-teacher relationship, it's really up to you to reveal those to your teacher rather than your teacher reading people's minds. So most people who have that ability don't develop it because of the ethical problems involved. Imagine for a moment that I could read minds. No, properly. What would happen next? As soon as the Secret Service in Australia, ACO it's called, found out, they would tell the CIA we wouldn't need any waterboarding to interrogate all these suspects in Guantanamo Bay. I'll just go there, read all their minds and tell the CIA. We wouldn't have to worry about airport security. They just stand me at the KLIA. I can tell straight away who's got explosives in their underpants. Because you can read people's minds. You can see you'd have no peace at all. So, if a person did have any of those powers, they would keep it quiet. They would not let people know. So people who do say they can read minds, they're the ones who are usually the frauds. However, I can't resist this story. This is a traditional Thai story. Because I think one of the great kings of Thailand, I think it would have been Rama the Fourth or the Fifth, in his court, there was a very smart, clever minister. But everyone else in the court was so jealous of him. They always wanted to somehow, he's a favourite of the king, and always got sort of preferential treatment and money and gifts. They wanted to bring him down. So they met in secret and said, look, this guy, he's just too clever, he's too popular, what can we do to cut him down? And one of them said, look, one of his failings is he's very clever, but he's very proud and conceited. What are we going to do tomorrow? He said, we'll say to the king, we'll praise this fellow. What a wonderful minister, what a great person, what a great service. He's so wonderful, he can probably read people's thoughts. And by the nature of this guy, he'll probably say yes. So then we can challenge him. So, well, if you can read thoughts, then read my thought. And no matter what he says, I will say, no, you're wrong. Because who can prove what I'm thinking? And that way, we'll embarrass him in front of the king. That was the plan. So the following day, at court, one of the ministers said, this particular minister is such a wonderful person. He's so kind. He's really helped and served you. What would the kingdom be without him? He's so wonderful. He can probably read people's minds. He said, yeah, of course I can. They got him. Okay, they say, read our minds. What are we thinking? Without, apparently a true story. What are we thinking, they asked. Without any hesitation, he said, all you people in this room are all thinking kind thoughts towards His Majesty. And they thought a while and said, yes, you're right, we are. That's a smart, that apparently actually happened. So, there's a question around the corner there. What's that? Stealing, yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. It's stealing, it's taking people's thoughts, taking things which don't belong to you. I agree with you there.
Do you have any experience about animals that can read your mind?
Animals that can read my mind. I know animals who can control you, like the cats or the dogs, they come on and look at you when you're having your dinner. They come and look at you. And, oh, you can't help it. Okay, you have it. They're very smart. But apparently there are these dogs. There was an article I remember reading just recently about a dog who's in a nursing home who actually knows, I think in the United States, who knows when someone's dying. Cat. A cat, that's right, yeah, the cat. That's right. Well, how it knows, I'm not sure, but it knows. That's sort of they're dying, so it goes and stays by them. So it certainly knows something. Okay, that's enough for tonight. So you squeeze all that out of me. Do I get a full breakfast tomorrow morning? Have I done enough work? Okay. So announcements. Shall we do the sharing of merits before the announcements or after? Okay, we'll do the sharing of merits now. With all your deceased relations, which were deceased in the last 49 days, and others. Please recite with me, Idam Me.
Idam Me Nyati Nang Ho Tu Sukhita Hon Tu Yatayo. Idam Me Nyati Nang Ho Tu Sukhita Hon Tu Yatayo. Idam me yati nang ho tu sukhita hom tu yatayo. Sadhu.
Sadhu. Yeah, good idea.
Thank you very much, Ajahn Brown.